evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the City Council meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, July 21st, 2015. Currently, I have 7 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. Tonight's invocation will be given by Councilmember Crawley, and then we'll be led in the pledge by one of our scouts, Camden Taylor. Mr. Crawley.
Dear Father in Heaven, we're thankful we can gather together as city leaders and residents and scouts and meet today to discuss city business. And please bless us in our decision making, that we can be wise, that we can be guided by wisdom, and also that we can think of each other's feelings and try to find understanding with the opposing side on all the issues that we discuss. And bless us that we can have that guidance in all the things we do, and we're thankful for the blessings we have. We're especially at this time thankful for the freedoms that we have and the pioneers and the heritage that we have here. And we say these things humbly in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thank you. Camden, you want to come forward?
You can stand at the microphone. It's good.
Audience, please rise. Repeat after me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Audience may be seated.
Thank you, Camden. Okay. Tonight, first thing we need to do is approve the meeting's agenda. I have a suggestion. We have Mr. Curtis from Temple of Shadows here, and someone like to make a motion. I would propose that we move item number 11 up ahead of item number 8 in order to accommodate Mr. Curtis. So I'll take a motion now on the agenda.
I propose we move item number 11 before item number 8 on the agenda.
Okay. I have a motion to amend the agenda as is stated with that adjustment. Is there a second?
Second.
I have a second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Next item is public comments. And so I did not see anyone had signed up, but I'm assuming, Mr. Curtis, you do want to speak in public comments. Do you want to speak in public comments right now, or do you want to wait, until we bring up your item, which will just be in a few minutes? Okay, very good. Okay, next item then is our consent agenda. This just takes one motion to approve both of them, but first is minutes from just one meeting, June 16, 2015, City Council meeting, and then the appointment of poll workers for the 2015 municipal primary election. So I will take that motion now.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Okay. I have a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Aye. I guess I'll second.
Mr. Crawley seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Next item.
I just ask a question with regard to the poll workers.
Sure.
Is that the minimum number, or is there a maximum?
Ms. Mulvey?
I only need three.
Okay.
Because all we're doing is counting on election day, so it'll just be myself and three poll workers and probably some poll watchers.
All right.
Is there any early counting allowed, or do you have to do all of it on election day?
I could start before, but I'm not going to.
No need. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let us move on. City business. Start from my left, Mr. Bunker, and then we'll go down the row.
Okay, so we did not have a Timpanogos Special Service District meeting this month. That's been canceled until next month. Just some other notes. The staff met with the principal of Lone Peak High School this last week. Our main focus was to see how we could work together to get programs for our youth integrated into the high school programs. We're trying to work with club teams like soccer and get some other things going like chess, robotics, some different activities besides just the sports teams, but our discussion centered around having like the volleyball team, having the members of the volleyball team actually do either a class or a program during the summer for other kids. And that would benefit our youth as well as benefit the high school and their programs. We will be having a new teen flag football starting in September, and we would encourage teenagers that are in 10th to 12th grade. In addition to that, we have our regular flag football for grades 2nd through 9th grade. So you guys can all have a chance to play flag football. And information is on the website at the city, so tell your parents to go there and sign you up. Our soccer leagues are going, and Taught Soccer is in swing, ages 3 to 4. Our soccer program goes through 2nd grade. It's still open for sign-up, so if you want to do that, you can still participate. We worked out an agreement with Stars United, which is a soccer club, to use Mesquite Park this next year, and they will be doing some service for us, and they also will be paying a fee for that. They are interested in finding some more land in Cedar Hills and developing a new soccer park. They've talked about that and would love to team up with the city to do something like that. So that's all I have.
Thank you. Mrs. Reese.
So I'm working on the state of the city. I sent you all an email last week of the suggested topics, but if you have any other feedback, just let me know if there things that you think should be included in there. The Cultural Arts Committee sent their org chart and their budget for fiscal year 2016, and I sent that to you all as well for your review. But it includes things like a date night event in September, a Winterfest in January, the Arts Festival in June, a community theater production, and the annual summer concert series, and then some supplies. And then lastly, on Family Festival Committee, I guess there were a few people who said they didn't get Keith's report, and it was actually in the agenda for June 16th, so it's still in that packet if you need to go back and review it. And that's it.
Okay, thank you. Since we last met, Lone Peak Public Safety has not met, neither has the Finance Department, Finance Committee, or MAG. Those MAG's meeting is not held in July, come back in August, and then I'll report back on Special Service District once we meet. On the we reinstituted or reconvened the Golf Course Financial Advisory Committee. We met last Thursday night, and we will continue to meet regularly. Our meetings will be open, so they will be noticed. And the next one, I believe, is August the 6th, Thursday night at 8 p.m. And the agenda to that will be published shortly. So any council members can attend. However, only council members Augustus and Crawley will be members of that committee. Everyone else will just attend as any resident would. So, Mr. Geddes.
Okay. The Utah Valley Dispatch did not actually meet since our last meeting, but one of the things that has happened is the building that is we've got in our budget, as we're paying a portion of it. There was a bid opening this last week, and unfortunately, all the bids are higher than it was anticipated. To the tune of $1 million is the low bid higher, and the high bid is $2 million higher than our budget. So it's created some problems. The committee is going to meet on August 13th or 9th, and to try to see if we can work out something to cut some costs out of it. I think there's a feeling that we kind of got caught in a time frame when a lot of contractors are busy, so just things have gone up, and you know.
You're on that special committee, right?
I am.
Within the district.
Right. Okay. Yeah, the building committee. So we'll see. I'll just continue to report. I hope it can get built. It's a beautiful building. But it may have to come back and ask for the cities for more money. We'll just have to see.
And we can say no.
We can say no.
All right.
And then also the Park Beautification Meeting Committee met last week, and we are meeting tomorrow morning on the roundabout with some ideas to how to make that work.
and Bay Hill Park is still being looked at. And there is going to be a citywide breakfast in August, so prepare for that.
When is that?
It is
15th.
And I would at 9th. At nine, what?
9 o'clock
on the 15th. That's a Saturday. They have asked that all the city council members, if they could, participate, and there would be some even participate in cooking and serving the food. So if that, if you guys can all put that on your calendars and plan to be here as helpers as opposed to just participants as
can
in
you,
the past.
Can you send an email to all the councils so that they all know?
I will.
Thank you. Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. Mr. Crawley.
Yeah. As mentioned, the Finance Committee did not meet, nor anything for emergency preparedness. The Golf Course Finance Committee did meet, though, and the only thing I could add to what Mayor Gigi said on that is that we, as a committee, appointed Rick Stewart as the chairperson, and we're going to look at ways to improve the golf course first and then look at some alternatives and just see if there's anything that compares to continuing and just improving the course. So we'll look at two different options and see where we go.
Thank you. Mr. Augustus.
General Planning Committee hasn't met again since my last update, and North Point Solid Waste hasn't met either.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's move on. Now, we are on item number 11, which we have moved up, which is a discussion on traffic control at 4600 West and Harvey Boulevard. And so, Mr. Bunker, how about if we let Mr. Curtis come and give his comments, and then you can go after that?
Sure.
Okay. Mr. Curtis, if you could give your full name and address, please.
Kevin L. Curtis, 9607 Temple Shadows Drive in Cedar Hills. Thank you for letting me come and just make a few comments. First of all, I want to acknowledge how Mayor Gigi and Mr. Bunker have been very helpful in communicating the plans and ideas relative to the traffic control change at 4600 West and Harvey Boulevard. They indicated and pointed out how there is a safety concern as traffic approaches from the south and has some limited visibility, not because the fence there is out of specification, but rather it's just the angle that the curve creates. They've also been very helpful in giving us ideas on how to rectify that and made a proposal for a chicane as well as for alterations of the fence line, etc., which I'm sure if you haven't received already, you will soon, that proposal. I'm here to just express our preferred first option, which is a less cost to the taxpayers of Cedar Hills, and that is to make that a four-way stop at this point in time. We recognize that that's a collector road and is intended to not have that kind of a traffic sign going east and west. However, until any further work goes further west across North County Boulevard, the traffic would still accommodate a four-way stop. We feel this would be very inexpensive to do, achieve the safety objectives of what is being proposed, and representing the residents of Temple Shadows, we feel that would be an adequate solution for the time being. We know that that would have to be revisited in the future, of course, as expansion occurs to the west. But we want to just take an opportunity as a representative of that community to express our preference for a four-way stop. Less cost, very quick to do, and it would achieve the safety objectives of the proposal. Now, having said that, we've also indicated to Mayor Gigi that we would accommodate and cooperate in the proposed changes as well. But we want to make sure that you heard as a city council that there is another option, and it does meet the objectives. And while we recognize that that would still have to be made, the changes would have to be made later on, we could save some money at least at this point in time and have a quick solution to the safety issue. That's all I have to say, Mayor. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So, Mr. Bunker, if you want to now make your presentation.
So, Mayor and Council, as we discussed in the work session, and as Mr. Curtis mentioned, we are talking about some traffic safety issues at 4600 West and Harvey Boulevard. So in the proposal, in your packets, you have a layout of a chicane that would be proposed on Harvey Boulevard. This chicane would do a couple of things. The goal for the chicane would be to slow traffic via traffic mitigation device, slow traffic through the area, and then also allow residents who are on the south side of that road to cross Harvey Boulevard in a safer manner. We have been petitioned by Temple Shadows in the past to provide some kind of crossing other than at the intersection. So they have, and I don't know if Mr. Curtis was on board then, but the HOA actually approached the city and said, hey, we would like to be able to cross Harvey Boulevard mid-block. And so with that in mind, with the safety issues and the site distance issues at 4600 West and Harvey Boulevard at that intersection, we were trying to kill two birds with one stone and give a safe place for these residents on the south side to cross without going clear to the intersection and coming back specifically to the church house there. So the road, as was mentioned, is a collector road. The city standards are that we try to eliminate four-way stops on that road. The intersection there there's a disparity between the traffic going east-west and the traffic that's going north-south. There's many more cars going east-west. And when there's that kind of a situation, what happens is the cars that are going east-west seem to pile up at the intersection. They have to queue back as they wait their turn to go through the intersection when there's no one there to go north-south through the intersection. So drivers tend to blow through the stop sign as they get impatient for stopping for no reason. So four-way stops have their place. In this case, it's not advisable from an engineering position. Hills Engineering also, they did a traffic count at the intersection, so that's how we know what the disparity is between the vehicles coming to the intersection. And they also recommended a different traffic control device other than four-way stop.
Did that have a ratio?
I don't know that there was a ratio given. It was total number of cars. So they did a traffic count and showed the total number of cars.
But they didn't compare both ways?
Both ways, for every leg of the intersection. So all cars going straight, all cars turning right, all cars turning left at each leg. So they had all that data. And so with all of those issues combined, it would be my recommendation that we would actually do the chicane. It is a higher cost than a four-way stop. A four-way stop is the cheapest way to, although not necessarily effective, it is cheaper than doing a chicane. The chicane would be more effective for a traffic mitigation device, a traffic calming device. But so we've discussed this several times in past city council meetings, just a way to remedy the situation out there and try and make it safe for the residents. It's not just the residents in the Temple Shadows HOA, it's the other residents who approach that intersection. So we're trying to really balance a lot of people's needs there. So does anybody have any questions?
I do. So if the council decided to do a four-way stop, that doesn't take away from the fact that Temple Shadows still would like a easier way to get across the street. So have you thought about if there was a four-way stop, could you still have a chicane? Or what would be the effect of doing both things? Because the chicane has the advantage for Temple Shadow residents in allowing them to cross the street more safely. But if you had both of those things, what's the effect on traffic?
Again, the four-way stop, it would just be as ineffective as it ever was. It would be really unnecessary, in my opinion. You can do both. You could do both. It would provide a safe way for the residents to cross the street right there. So it is possible to do both. It would not be my recommendation to do both.
So my question is this, and Mayor, you can determine whether or not you want Mr. Curtis to answer, but My understanding is that if the residents of Temple Shadows prefer the four-way stop over the chicane, I'm assuming that they're aware that that doesn't resolve their crossing to the chapel across the street. And other than the cost of the taxpayers, what do they view as the benefit of the four-way stop over the chicane?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we're ignoring part of the story. What was presented to us is that the city would also bear the cost of making all modifications to the fence, mm-hmm. as well as adding in what we would prefer to be the solution for security, and that's adding additional fence further back in the property. So what we still would prefer a chicane, of course, for safety reasons. But the four-way stop does address what we're trying to do in terms of safety. As to how much backup would happen, I travel that road all the time, and I'm not convinced that there's enough traffic that you'd actually have backed up traffic, and I'm not convinced that people will blow through that sign as is suggested, because if someone's coming from the north or south and it's a four-way stop, people will stop at the stop sign. And so we would like to have a safer way to get across the street there without having to go clear down and over, because that doesn't happen really, practically speaking. But we're also trying to address the issue of safety, which is the four-way stop. Now, having said that, if the city has agreed to pay for the modifications to the fence and the additions of additional fence, we're accepting of that proposal in addition to the chicane. We are just coming to voice our preference for a four-way stop as a probably 2 to 5 year solution that's lesser cost. Does that help?
Yeah, so the preference really is just based on cost.
Yeah, yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. And you realize with the four-way stop that you wouldn't have that access point across to the chapel, and that's not really a concern?
Well, we're trying to be good citizens here, right? And we're just proposing that there is a solution to the safety issue that was the original issue at the time. The chicane does slow down traffic. It does allow for a passage across the street with more safety. That's true. But we're just coming to voice a first preference of saving the taxpayers some money with a four-way stop, which would achieve the objectives that was originally raised by the city.
The four-way stop would be just as safe of a crossing place as a chicane would be, wouldn't it?
But it's not in the location that would,
right, it would
anyone
make people,
would ever go that way.
It would make people get a little more exercise.
can I ask a question to Mr. Bunker? Are we aware of any accidents or anything at that intersection to date?
I don't know of any major accidents that have happened there. I'm sure there's been some kind of a fender bender, but...
There was not a serious accident, but there was a girl that was struck by a car about a year and a half ago over by the school during a pickup time or drop-off time.
I thought she struck the car.
She did. And so the car was moving, and she ran into the car.
But that wasn't at this intersection. That was at the school?
I don't know exactly where it was, but it was somewhere.
It was down further east.
Down further.
East of the art entrance.
Okay.
So... It just seems to me like, I know we've discussed this for 2 years now, and I mean, I think it's worth doing something, but I'm not sure if it's, you know, I've never really known of a four-way stop at a big speed bump either. Is that common? I've never seen that.
That intersection is a raised intersection, and it's not really effective. And there's limitations with that. Again, drainage is one of those, but that intersection was not designed to really get people to slow down very effectively.
I mean, I do drive that every day, multiple times. I mean, that's my street. So, I mean, I live right off Harvey. So, you know, I understand the concerns, but I also would like to point out that there, for the people that live, and I don't know what you refer to that neighborhood, but I used to be referred to as Panda Homes down in that neighborhood. Do they still refer to it as that?
I don't think so.
But whatever the neighborhood is south there, you know, that is not their only way out. I mean, they can go west to closer to the nursery and go east or west on Harvey. Yeah. So I think there's 1, 2, 3 blocks of people down there. So, I mean... if there really is a safety concern and they're going west, which is the issue, the safer way is maybe to educate the people that live in that neighborhood. Now, this doesn't affect Temple Shadows, I understand that. But I think this issue was originally brought up by one of the residents in that neighborhood, correct?
Yeah.
So I would think that, you know, is it possible to put up and say we'll do a six-month trial period of a four-way stop and just see how it goes? I mean, that doesn't cost hardly anything. I know that's not your preference, and the studies have shown that it's probably not a good idea, but maybe a trial period. Is that possible?
Yeah, I was actually thinking the same thing as well.
So was I, actually, so it sounds like a good idea.
So, any other comments, questions?
No, I agree. I mean, if it is effective, that's a lot better than spending $20,000 on the chicane.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mr. Augustus,
I think we had $300,000 in there one time for a roundabout.
That was for the roundabout.
I just want to be careful because, I mean, as much as we all like to think we know traffic, I mean, we kind of need to rely on the professionals to tell us what will work and what won't. And it's hard to say that putting in a four-way stop for a six-month trial period would work or it wouldn't, because you have a hard time retraining people to use it, and then you pull it away, and then people are going to come back with backlash saying, why did you remove it? Because it was effective in their eyes. So there's a lot of pros and cons on both sides of this. So I don't know. I don't know where I sit on it right now. I mean, yeah, of course we want to be careful with our taxpayers' money, but at the same time, we want to make sure that we're doing what's right the first time so that we don't have to redo it a second time and spend even more money.
Which, in this case, I think the trial period is cheap. I mean, the signs are really cheap. I mean, it's a re-education. I totally agree with you, though.
But the problem is, once you put stop signs up, you're going to have a hard time taking them down because you're going to get backlash from people saying, why did you pull them down?
Good point, but as was brought up in our work session, I mean, I hadn't driven Cedar Hills Drive in a long time. I'm talking about 2 years ago now, but for some reason I hadn't been on Cedar Hills Drive in a long time. It's just not a route that I took. And I automatically stopped at all those four-way stops in the 15 years I've lived here. I got to them like, oh, that's not a stop sign anymore, you know. And then, oh, that's not. I think you eliminated two or three four-way stops on Cedar Hills Drive. So it does take a little bit of education, but I think people can live with it. I mean, I understand it now.
I'm
I drive Cedar Hills Drive occasionally.
So that's what I'm saying is that we've got to rely on the professionals because none of us are traffic professionals.
That's the only thing that makes me nervous, too, is that the professionals are telling us not to do that. But I think if we did it, I would want to have something flashing so that people would know that it's there, too, if we did before we stopped. But I'd be willing to try that.
You know, I think a trial period is a good way to accommodate or attempt to accommodate everyone in that it's not permanent. You're trying to see if it works.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Understand. Yeah.
Yeah. And so... So that I'm glad you said that, because that's what I was thinking too, is a trial period may be a good way to go. So any other questions, comments? This is just a discussion item tonight, nothing more. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Okay, now we're moving back to the top of scheduled items. And we are item number 8, which is an action item on a resolution indicating the intent of boundary adjustment with Cedar Hills. So, Mr. Goodwin.
I told the scouts I'd be really exciting tonight, so we're going to talk about boundary adjusting. So.
They may find it exciting if you tell them it's because a septic tank failed.
They may. So as discussed in work session, we had two Pleasant Grove residents approach the city regarding the possibility of a boundary adjustment. One of them, Gina Day, whose property is located at 4495 North 900 West, actually had a septic tank fail, and the Cedar Hills sewer lateral was the closest to her home, and so the city allowed her to hook up a lateral to our line with the understanding that she initiate this boundary line adjustment. My understanding is that she spoke with her neighbor the Wilsons, and they were also interested in boundary adjusting once they talked about the services that they could, the utility services that they could get from the city, namely pressurized irrigation. So we have what you have before you tonight is their a resolution approving that, and as just also as discussed in work session, the same request to initiate about an adjustment of a common municipal boundary would need to be done in Pleasant Grove City as well. I'm not sure that is on their agenda tonight. We will need to have a conversation with Scott Darrington, their city manager, or their city attorney, and see where the process is over there and what we need to do to expedite that. But this is the resolution before Cedar Hills. Both municipalities need to adopt the resolution in order for the boundary adjustment to take effect. So, are there any questions about this?
My question is the same one that I had when we allowed her to hook on, which is, if Pleasant Grove says no, then what?
David, what do we decide on that?
Actually, the residents have an option there to petition further. If they can't get the services from the other city, then there could be a compelling reason for the citizen to say, hey, I will take a different course of action in order to get those services.
And they're willing to do that?
I know one of them is.
The Days?
Yes.
Okay.
Any further questions, anybody? If not, this is an action item. I'll take a motion.
So I will make a motion to approve resolution 7-21-2015A, a resolution indicating the intent of the City Council of Cedar Hills, Utah to adjust the common boundary with Pleasant Grove City, Utah, and authorizing a public hearing thereon, providing for notice of said hearing.
Okay. I have a motion. Is there a second?
I second it.
Motion's been seconded by Mr. Geddes. Any further comment? Very good. Let's have a vote. Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Crowley.
Aye.
Mr. Augustus.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much. You. Moving on to item number 9, also an action item regarding open fires and fireworks east of Canyon Road. Mr. Goodwin, are you?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Mr. Bunker asked me to just stay up here and cover this one. Once again, as discussed in work session, the city has, per the direction that the staff received during the last city council meeting, the staff has gone ahead and prepared this resolution, effectively banning fireworks, both aerial and non-aerial, east of Canyon Road. We sent out a phone message to the residents on Monday night informing them of this pending ban so that they were aware of that before the law allowed them to light off fireworks. So. We do allow these residents to use Mesquite Park as an area where they can come and light off fireworks. We did do that during the 4th of July, and in your memo it does talk about the city did receive a complaint from an adjacent resident. In an effort to alleviate those concerns that the resident had, the city is changing the policy a little bit to add a buffer zone, which in your memo it says 100 feet, but I was informed it's 120 feet north of the property line, or is it 100 feet? 125, excuse me. So 125 feet to the south to the property line, there will be no lighting of fireworks. It'll just be a spectator zone. It'll have cones, candlesticks, and it'll be roped off with signs just saying as much. In my discussion with David Bunker prior to tonight's meeting, he says that he did have a discussion with Mrs. Rosenthal, and she was aware of the city's plan to have this buffer, and she was very pleased with that proposal to eliminate the trash falling into her yard. So, and one other thing that I noticed is in the memo, the last sentence does say that this safe zone will be identified with signage and cones. Following the event, Public Works will clean up any remaining debris from the park and will offer this service to any home that abuts the park as well. So,
will that be the next day?
That will probably be the next day,
okay.
Yeah.
I was only going to recommend on that one that I'm sure there's scout groups and people looking for a service project that they might be willing to just go out and if you get any requests between now and then, there's a service project available on the 25th of July.
Yeah. We'll keep that in mind.
So my question on that real quick is Ms. Rosenthal did email me and I gave her this information, and she said Mr. Bunker had contacted her on Friday and they had discussed this as well, but she in her email to me indicated that the conversation said that we were going to identify a new location for future years. Is that not the case?
Like we discussed, we had talked about the possibility of other locations. Chiefly among them was the driving range, and some of the limitations that we in our discussions about the driving range, the limitations were accessibility, where do people park and how do they get down here, and then not only that, but the liability. We have the pond down there, there's no gate around the pond, it's dark, and there's nothing to prevent someone from falling into the pond, a child. And second, the second major liability was the fire hazard that's presented when people are lighting fireworks on the driving range. There's a lot of dry brush around, and I know that this is where we light off our fireworks for the City Family Festival, but we have a brush truck on hand, and they're always ready to put out a fire. And typically, except for this year, we always had a fire as a result of people lighting us lighting our fireworks here. So, but it's never gotten out of control because we've taken the precaution of having Lone Peak ready here.
So I recognize that part of the discussion. I think what Mrs. Reese is asking, though, correct me if I'm wrong, is that Mrs. Rosenthal seems to be under the impression that we're going to discuss a new venue. Is that correct?
For future years.
So is she under the impression that we're going to find a new venue, or where's the disconnect?
I don't know that the city has told her that we will find a new venue, because there are limitations, even just taking Heritage Park into account. Heritage Park has a lot of tree coverage. It'd be really difficult to have someone light fireworks in that area without some hazards. Mesquite Park, given the clear, open, flat area that it is, presents a very positive place for this event to happen. So if the council has other ideas, I mean, we're willing to entertain those.
Well, I guess my only feedback then is let's try the 120-foot buffer and see how it goes. But okay, if residents in that area still feel like their yard is littered with debris from fireworks, then maybe we just have to determine that we don't have a safe location for residents to go. I mean, if Alpine's the only other city that does, maybe we coordinate with Alpine or something like that. I don't know, but we were doing it as a convenience, right, for people on the east side of Canyon Road. But if it's now just causing an inconvenience for the people near Mesquite Park, then we've just traded one issue for another.
Yeah,
but also I don't want to forget the point that if Mrs. Rosenthal is thinking that we're going to address a different location, then I think staff needs to clear that up with her. And you guys get on the same page in terms of you're saying that there's problems having it to other areas in the city, but that doesn't resolve the fact that if she's thinking that it's going to be moved, and we haven't discussed that tonight other than really superficially,
right,
then I would suggest that staff meet with her and say, or get on the same page in terms of what it is she's expecting, and then communicate that back to us.
So maybe what we do is on the following Monday when we come back to the office, we get on the phone with Mrs. Rosenthal and discuss her thoughts on how the buffer is. Because I do think that the buffer will aid a lot in the amount of debris that falls down into her yard. So we'll get her thoughts on that. I think that's
okay. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but my point, though, is that she's under the impression that something is happening, but you're saying something is not happening. Yeah. That's the disconnect.
Okay. Well, I guess we're going to have to just discuss that with her on the following Monday.
Where is Ms. Rosenthal? I mean, we can see the houses. Is it one that you can point out?
She's one of the ones that on the south end of Mesquite Park there. She's just over the fence line there. She's just one of those houses.
Okay.
So she is right next to the park, and if people were lighting them on the very southern end of the park, there's a good chance that.
But aren't they lighting them all in the parking lot and everything? So.
No, I think they're in the park.
They're actually lighting them on the grass and everything?
My understanding is they're on the grass.
I've never been there during. I mean, my street. We light them off on our street, so.
From what I'm understanding, it's actually all over the park, and when the fire truck got there, the brush truck got there after people had already started and kicked people off of the undeveloped property where they were lighting fireworks as well.
In the weeds?
Mm-hmm.
In the lots there?
Yeah. So it's pretty much happening all over that whole general area.
Maybe we could have this discussion that the fireworks should only be in designated hard surface areas. Really, that's where they should be.
But then we don't have the space there. Because the hard surface area, we have our little parking lot there, and it's not very big.
To the west, we can't put them on the parking lot for the church.
Yeah, we can't designate the church's parking lot as a fireworks zone.
They could still park in the church parking lot and light them off on the parking lot on the west.
But we can't require that, though.
True.
Alpine's actually has theirs on a park similar to ours, other than it's a bigger park, but it's still, they're lighting them off on the grass.
And they do it on the grass.
They do it on the grass.
Well, there's a lot of weird fireworks that don't work on grass, you know, that bounce around.
A lot of people put down plywood.
Is that what they're doing?
So there's probably a combination. All I know is that on the grass, they probably light off lots of aerials, and on the concrete, that's where they light off stuff. Okay. Any further questions, comments? This is an action item. Someone want to make a motion?
Sure. Let's see. I move that we approve resolution number 7-21-2015B, a resolution of the City Council of the City of Cedar Hills adopting specified restrictions of fireworks and open fires citywide, specifically that we're banning all fireworks and open fires east of Canyon Road.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Crawley seconded. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Gustis.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much. Moving on to item number 10. Mr. Mogg, I think you're going to talk to us about Heislett's Hollow and Bay Hill Drive.
Yes, Mayor and Council. Public Works Department was instructed to reduce the amount of traffic access to the Bonneville Shoreline Trail area at the location of the south end of Bay Hill Drive and the north end of Heislett's Hollow Drive. Now, this was completed by the use of Jersey barriers at Bay Hill Drive and the installation of a gate at Heislett's Hollow. The Bay Hill Drive area is now under construction for the development of a subdivision, and when that's completed, there will no longer be access in that area, and the barriers will be removed. The Heislett's Hollow area has reduced the amount of traffic as requested to the shooting areas where, well, it's the vehicles that are accessing the shooting area, and that has been accomplished. I was just speaking with Lieutenant Lydiard, who has his data now that there's been fewer incidents in that area concerning that problem. As a benefit of the gate to the Public Works Department, is that was an issue for our stormwater maintenance, the mud and dirt and rocks being tracked onto the road and getting into the storm sewer. Then this has eliminated that problem or reduced it substantially. There's still a few improvements that we're looking at doing for maintenance vehicles and the tracking of the associated mud and dirt that comes from those also. But if there's any questions, I think that's...
Council, questions? Nothing?
It's a hard issue because you don't want to restrict freedom of people to use the mountainside nearby, but then when they abuse it, it's just a tough thing. It's hard for me to know which side to take on that one.
Okay.
I'll just state the same comment I made last time, that it's disappointing that a few people have ruined it for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think that's so true, actually.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it is. We have a few people that go up there and ruin it, and unfortunately the city has to enforce its rules, and so those few people have caused us to take action. So.
And for the most part, they probably aren't Cedar Hills residents. I mean, we don't know.
Right, exactly.
Anyway, it's a shame.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much. We're on to item number 12, which is a discussion on the signs in a public right-of-way. Mr. Goodwin.
Based on some resident feedback, we've been asked to have a discussion tonight on the signs in public right-of-ways. These are city signs, and they are typically non-regulatory signs, and we'll get into that. First, I wanted to touch on the purpose of the sign ordinance. If you have the code in front of you, it's in 10.5.26. And it says that the purpose and intent of the sign ordinance is to promote the public safety, foster an appealing cityscape. Goes on to say it's to promote the health and well-being of the public generally, pedestrians, motorists, by minimizing obstruction, visual or otherwise, distraction, and related safety and traffic hazards within the city. And then it goes through and it gives provisions for temporary signs and permanent signs in both residential zones and commercial zones. There is signage that is exempt from these general provisions, and that is signage dedicated for government use. In 10-526B4B, it says signage dedicated for government use, including traffic signs, traffic lights, street signs, directional signs, public safety signs, and related signage shall be exempt from the prohibition against signage in any public right-of-way. However, these are all regulatory signage, typically directing traffic for safety purposes. I guess the genesis of this discussion was the roundabout specifically, but the discussion pertains to city property as a whole, not just the roundabout. Because if you drive through the city during the summer, you'll see family festival banners out on Canyon Road adjacent to the trail. You'll see the same thing adjacent or at the fire station. You'll see right now, I think there's a flag football sign there. There's a soccer banner down at the roundabout. The city uses its ground, its land, its right-of-ways as a forum to get word out to the residents for recreational programs, for events coming up. We just had signs made up for this free breakfast that the city's offering in August, and so those will go out informing residents of upcoming events. I met with Greg Gordon, our community events director, or community services director, and talked about the impact of not having signs down at the roundabout, and it was actually pretty drastic. There was a period of time when we did not put signs in the roundabout where we moved them off to the side, and what we saw was in 1 year we saw decreases in our recreational programs, junior jazz, flag football, and soccer, from anywhere from 15% to 30%. In junior jazz, it was about a 15% decrease. It went down 112 participants. To put that into perspective, that's about 12 teams. That cost the city approximately $5,000. Football decreased about 50 participants, soccer 67 participants. All told, between these three sports, the decrease in participation revenue actually totaled nearly 10 grand. So the city, there is consequences for other departments for the city not putting their signage in, specifically in the roundabout in this case. So what we'd done was we wanted to get your feedback on where to go. This isn't an action item tonight, and that's because it's a Title 10 issue. So since it's Title 10, this would need to go to the Planning Commission with a recommendation from the City Council to review this and make any changes. There would need to be a public hearing in that body, and then they would make a recommendation and come back to the City Council, where there would be another public hearing and followed by any action that this legislative body would take.
Okay.
My question then is for Mr. Shaw, which is, reading through that exemption, are we violating our ordinance since it says related use, which you said are
typically regulatory signs.
Regulatory signs.
Yeah, right now as the ordinance reads, there is no exemption for what would be called proprietary or recreational signage put out by the city. It would be an easy fix to the ordinance to be able to do that, but right now we probably are.
Yeah, I agree with that. I read through it, and I feel like as honorable and as good as the causes of Family Festival and summer concert series and things like that, then if we're violating our ordinance, which I think we are, and I think you just said we are, then we address that. And so in talking with one of the council members who created this, and I live down there, so I know what bothers me. I know what bothers him. I think I'm not bothered so much by city signs that are talking about Family Festival, but I recognize that violates the ordinance. So how I feel doesn't really matter. I know what this former council member thinks that, and I agree that the for sale signs and the yard sale signs they shouldn't be in our roundabout. So I can see that. But I think we as a council have got to figure out a balance here, which is that there's certainly an advantage or there's a benefit to having family festival signs on Canyon Road and on North County Boulevard on our property. But we've got to clean up our language in order to make sure we're not violating our own ordinance. And maybe at the same time we look at addressing the roundabout and keeping that sacred. So, go ahead.
Can I say something?
Right ahead.
I was, and I talked to a couple people about this in the rec department as well. And it's clear that the rec suffers if it's not there. It's just, you know, it's just a fact of life. Nobody, not everybody reads the newsletter, and you know, they just don't know that soccer is available or T-ball is available or whatever it is we're advertising. So what I'd like to see is a more uniform sign that could be put up in sleeves, so that the sleeves are in the ground all the time. I think I had that discussion with you, Chandler, didn't I?
We did.
Like each banner that we make is always the same side, and it's always the same size, and it's sleeved on both sides so that you put a sleeve in the ground and it covers on both sides and holds it nice and tight, and it's up for 2 weeks before and then it's gone.
Yeah. So are you talking about that in the roundabout?
In the roundabout, yeah.
Okay.
Because the rec people clearly say they suffer big time if it's not there. Yeah. And that's a fact.
That is. And I don't know that the entire decrease that we saw when we moved the sign, the entire decrease in rec participation can be attributed to the sign not being in the roundabout. But it's hard when none of the other factors change, where you're still sending out emails to past participants, you're still sending flyers to the schools. When this is the only thing that changed, it's hard to not attribute a lot of that to the sign not being the roundabout. What we'd talked about in exec staff was the possibility of, if the sign was in the roundabout, could you make it more aesthetically pleasing,
right,
to
yeah.
people? And I think that's something that maybe drives people a little bit bonkers. Is
the T-stakes
for a while,
and all that kind of stuff.
Was about
yeah.
6 feet above the ground, and the sign only was 3 feet, so you had this big post hanging coming out. I think sometimes the bungee cords that kind of strap it down for the wind kind of get tangled. So if there was a way to make it a little bit more aesthetically easy on the eye, I think that would go a long way with some people.
What if it was, you know, there's grass around the roundabout.
Yeah.
Some of it's owned by the dentist. Some of it's owned by his common area on the north and the south sides of the roundabout. And so what if we tried something like that?
Well, that's actually where the sign was. It was on the corner of the Smart property. That's where the sign was when we saw the decrease in participation.
Most of the signs that I think that the people down there are talking about are actually in the roundabout.
They are. So, okay. So when we moved them to that corner where the Smart property is, that's when we saw the decrease in participation. Now, the yard sale signs that you mentioned, those that you see, those are never allowed on city property. And we are part-time code enforcement. Could probably spend 40 hours a week going around picking things up like that. And as I drive through the city on a Saturday, that's typically when I see them pop up. And when I come back through on Monday, they're all gone. But it's for that Friday night, Saturday, you see people start putting up their signs for their upcoming yard sale, and then they're gone. But we don't have a code enforcement person here on Saturday.
I'd like to make a comment now. I wanted to say that I disagree entirely with the former councilman's opinion. I think that it's great having signs there for local city events, and it gives us a small town feel, which I like. So I disagree entirely with that there's even a problem with having them there, and they help the city out. Why not keep doing them? Although I think we should change the code to allow it. So, and it's nice to clean it up too, make them so they're nicer. I mean, I can understand that. We don't want them to look scruffy or anything like that, but I like it.
Isn't it true? I mean, this former council member that we're talking about sent us some pictures.
What's that?
Yes.
We got some pictures of yes. a mattress sale and.
But that is actually allowed.
That's yeah. was my question.
Were they holding the sign?
Yeah.
And
we can't do anything about that, correct?
We can't, as tacky as you may think that is, that we can't do anything about yeah. that. That's a form of protected speech. So.
But you can restrict where they exercise that speech, right?
it's a question for Mr. Shaw.
If it's the public right-of-way and people are allowed to congregate there, then they're allowed to exercise free speech there as well.
So on the roundabout is probably not the best place for them, and I don't know that the city's ever allowed anybody to protest in the middle of the roundabout.
Now, we could have a very long discussion about the differences between open, limited, and closed public forums. But the general rule for this discussion is that the sidewalks are traditionally known as open public forums, not limited.
So would a yard sale sign be considered free speech?
If they're standing there holding the sign,
so if it's a person
then it
holding
would be
it,
transitory.
If it's a sign by itself, that's different.
Yeah, if they're there with the sign, then that's the exercise of the free speech. If they drop the sign off and leave, it is not.
Okay.
And we've even allowed people to campaign there with their signs holding up in the roundabout.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been allowed. You probably won't see it this year with the vote by mail, but in the past, every election day, there are people in the roundabout holding their signs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Every election.
Every
day.
Election. Okay.
There's five candidates here tonight. I don't think we're encouraging them to.
There is no election day this time. So. Yeah.
Every day is election
so,
day.
Every day. Every day is election day.
So my question is, have we looked at places like Heritage Park and Canyon Road and the 9 acres and those other, because here's the dilemma for me is I don't want to reduce attendance and participation. We need that, and our residents like that, and they like the feedback. I also do feel a little bit bad that a resident has come to us and said, you're breaking your own ordinance, and we are saying, thanks for telling us, now we're going to change it. So that's my dilemma. Are there other locations that could be just as effective, or is staff saying that the roundabout is the only effective location?
I don't know that it's the only effective location, because we've found that putting a sign out by the fire station at that Canyon Road and Cedar Hills Drive junction is an effective place. There's a lot of cars that go by that. However, the daily traffic that goes through that roundabout, north, south, and east, west, is much higher than, you know, for even further down on 4600 West or in the middle of Cedar Hills Drive. Because that's where people are going to 4800 West. That's where people are going to Walmart. So you start seeing a higher ADT right there at that juncture. So it is a very effective place for a sign.
So if we were going to look at then saying we're going to allow signage in the roundabout and we're going to beautify it more or make it more aesthetically pleasing, whatever, I think we should also look at limiting how often signs can be in there then, because I think that was one of the complaints is that there's a sign there all the time. Maybe we put restrictions where we only allow a sign up for a week and then we have some downtime or something to that effect as well.
Well, and the other to that point on limitations, there are city events, family festival, junior jazz, and then there's city-related events. Because we've seen, and they're right, there's always typically a sign down in the roundabout, but there's the committee, like the arts committee was advertising for, was it Honk? Is that what
Honk?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's, and it's an effective place for advertising, so I understand why they want to be down there. But do we extend that to the committees as well? How far out does that go? Who do we let put the sign there? Is it just us?
And that's a great question, too, because I've seen signs in there for Celebrations Performers, which is not a city-sponsored event.
They use our building, but that's about it.
And so, in my view, we shouldn't allow them. If we're not going to allow any other private entity to utilize our public space, we shouldn't allow them either.
Okay. So
what about PTA meeting tonight?
No, it's not a city-sponsored event.
City-sponsored.
That's what I'm in favor of, city-sponsored. And I think limitations to maybe 30 days before the event closes or something like that.
So I have a question for Mr. Shaw. So could we legally, just for argument's sake, allow for signage promoting various city events on Canyon Road, North County Boulevard, but not in the roundabout? Would that be acceptable?
Yeah, the city could do what it wants with its own right of way.
Okay.
So if you were to choose to limit yourselves effectively to not putting anything in the roundabout, that would be your prerogative. Now the caution would be that with these non-city sponsored events, once you open it up to one, you open it up to all.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Thank you. Okay, any further comments on this discussion?
So one question or comment I had, Jenny said that the problem that she's having are listed your problems that you're experiencing with. The one that I'm experiencing is I've talked to, I don't know, quite a few residents. I've seen Facebook posts, and honestly, it seems like it's about split. I mean, yeah, we have one resident that started that said that they weren't happy with it, but we've also got quite a few residents that say, you know what, I like the reminder. I think that it provides a benefit to the city, same as Councilmember Crawley just said. So to me, we've got a split issue, and I guess we have to decide what to do with it and whether we do want to modify our ordinance and what restrictions we want to put on ourselves.
Well, we're clearly, I think, violating our ordinance, so we have to do something.
We have to change
it. That's not in dispute. It's just how you want to modify it.
No, and I'm not saying that was in dispute. I'm just saying now that this has been brought up, now we have to decide what we're going to do with it.
Yeah.
Because we are having some residents that say we want an all-out ban on it, but then we've got other residents that say, yeah, we do want some of those signs.
And that's why I'm wondering if we can find a happy medium of some sort, which would be my preference. And like I said, maybe that is we only allow a certain number of events. We only allow it for a certain length of time. I don't know what that looks like. Obviously, Planning Commission is going to have to discuss this because it has to go back to them first.
Well, legal is a big thing with that, too.
And that's the other thing is I would imagine that as of today, now that we know, we need to stop putting signs in the roundabout until this ordinance is updated, if it's updated.
Yeah, and if I might comment on that, one option would be to allow the signs to be placed. But just because they're allowed there doesn't mean you have to put them there. And so you may be able to handle that by administrative policy.
That's what I was going to say. I think it's silly to restrict ourselves when all we have to do is say, Chandler, don't do that, or David, don't do that, you know, as a council, to have it set in stone so we have to change it later if we change our mind. It just seems silly. But anyway.
But I mean, I would think that to protect the city, we should be following our own laws. Why make laws that the city doesn't follow?
That's right.
Oh, yeah. We should change our policy. We should change our code to allow us to put signs there, I think.
But if that doesn't happen, in the meantime, we're breaking our ordinance.
Yeah, and that's what I'm suggesting. Until the ordinance is changed, there probably ought to be a retraction of
moratorium for a while.
Yeah, but once it's changed, you perhaps ought to allow it anywhere, but that doesn't mean you have to exercise that.
Ah, okay. I see what you're saying.
All right.
Well, let me just throw one other thing. I mean, this probably won't go over very well with a lot of residents because we threw it out one time and Jenny got hammered on it. But how about an LED moniker?
I don't think that's going to go over very well.
Well,
thinking outside the box, and at least it's neat and clean.
I'm just saying.
You could incorporate it into a nice wall in the roundabout that's there permanently. I mean, it could be nice. It really could be nice.
You know the backlash we got over trying to put a sign on Canyon Road?
That's
put one in the roundabout.
Well, if it's done nicely, it would be very informative.
We tried to do it nicely on Canyon Road.
I was in support of that. So.
I know.
And there's not, well, and the difference is there aren't houses that are backing right up to there at the roundabout, but I still would think that Heritage Park would be a better location for that. I think, yeah, you'll have these residents up in arms if you put it in the roundabout.
Yeah.
Especially since the point of the roundabout, in addition to safety, was also to make it look nice. Well, and I don't know what the Parks and Trails are they're planning on redoing
anyway.
It's also
being redesigned right now, too. So
yeah, for what, though? I mean, to make it more beautified, I'm assuming.
Yes. It would be changing the landscaping is what they're talking about, raising it in the middle to kind of bring it up more.
I know when I served on that committee, they wanted it to be very similar to Alpine's.
Yes, they're still discussing it. A little bit different, but very similar along those lines.
Okay.
And it'd have to be one of those LED signs that goes in a complete circle all the way around about to get everybody to see it.
You could do it on the concrete front all the way around.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not going to go over.
Like Times Square.
Exactly.
Any further comments?
Yeah, right.
So when will this go to Planning Commission?
That's a good question. This cannot. We can put it on as a discussion item on the 28th of July, but it can't be a decision review recommendation for them at that date because it's too late for a public hearing to be noticed by then. So it would be on the August 25th Planning Commission.
Okay.
So you wouldn't see this before the City Council until, I would guess, the second meeting in September.
Okay.
All right, Mr. Goodwin, thank you very much. Let's move on to you're sticking around. Thank you.
Staying up.
We're going to have a discussion on St. Andrews Estates property. Mr. Goodwin, why don't you lead off?
Yeah. The city owns a 22-lot potential subdivision up here on Canyon Road. We refer to it as St. Andrews Estates. Currently, it is in the H1 zone. Like I said, it's 22 lots. The city used to have it for sale. It was pulled off the market, I want to say, about 3 years ago. And it's been off the market. There has been interest. I get phone calls every once in a while about people interested in what the city's plans are for that land. And that's kind of where it's just stayed for the last few years, as we kind of watch what's going on up Canyon. I know that there's been talk about possibly rezoning this land for a potential either commercial use or a mixed use, commercial residential use. And that's always just been speculative. It's never been any real discussions about it.
So the reason I wanted to bring this up is that I keep hearing from my real estate friends that there is a shortage of building lots in Utah County. And we had kind of been waiting for the real estate market to improve. I think everyone agreed that it probably has. And so I would just suggest that maybe we not necessarily a task force, but start talking with all kinds of professional real estate people about what the best use is for this. So there's already 22 lots that exist up there. So, you know, if residential is the best use, do we look at surplusing that? If it's mixed use, do we look at rezoning it? So this is a comprehensive discussion in terms of, I think, trying to figure out the value in monetizing St. Andrews Estates. So that's what this is about. Comments, questions?
Can you tell me what prices we were trying to charge before when we put it on the market?
I think that's just what I said, is that we need to speak with real estate professionals to find out.
So you don't know what we were trying to charge before? It was on the market before, right?
I don't think. Have we ever put it on the market?
Yeah, it has been on the market. Okay. It was on the market for a while. There was a big billboard sign on the property for a number of years advertising it. But that was from like 2007 to 2011.
Does anyone remember the prices that were charged?
I don't think we had them as actual prices because they were paper lots only because they're undeveloped.
Right.
So it was kind of just a lump sum purchase. It wasn't, hey, there's 120 here, 150 here. It was just one parcel.
But we spent a lot of money to develop it. Mm-hmm. And so now it is developed, ready to go.
No, it is not developed. No, it's absolutely not.
No, the only thing is
no laterals, no utilities, no street. I mean, there's nothing.
The only thing we did, the only thing the city did, I was not on the council at the time, was they removed they just quit watering hole number 15.
Right.
But whatever we did cost about $500,000, I remember it.
No, but that was to reconfigure the other holes so that they
So that was just the golf course reconfiguration.
They reconfigured hole number 9 and hole number 18 and then hole 15.
Right.
Okay. So the point of the discussion is just saying, I think we should start discussing this more and start having more serious conversations with professional real estate people to see if the council wants to surplus it. At this point, we don't know. We don't have enough information.
I think we discussed that, you know, the very first meeting I was ever on the council, because the market was still pretty bad.
Right.
And, you know, I'm still open to the highest value of that property. It doesn't necessarily have to be 22 lots. I mean, they were just paper lots. I mean, if someone were to come and offer us a bulk price for the paper lots, you know, I don't think we'll be happy with the price still.
Well, I think you're making my point.
Yeah.
Which is that we should just figure out the best value for that property
and how to monetize it.
But see, the problem I have with that is that property is only worth what a developer wants to pay for it.
Sure.
And, I mean, it's hard for us to go out and say, well, we're going to get this value out of residential, we're going to get this out of commercial, because until somebody really comes to us and puts numbers to it, we're taking a little bit of a shot in the dark, but it's more of an educated guess.
Well, I think you're making my point as well, which is that we need to talk with professional real estate people and say, you know the business, tell us what you think the best development plan of this is. Is it residential? Is it mixed use? Is it commercial? What is it? And for argument's sake, if it is residential, what do you think it'd be worth? So, and again, it's just that person's educated guess.
Yeah.
But you're right in that when push comes to shove, it's what a developer's willing to pay.
Right.
That's what the markets are about.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. Until we talk to somebody that's professional, that knows what they're doing and has the capability to sell a property like that, we're not going to know. So you're going to have to get somebody that has the background and the experience with that type of property.
Again, I agree. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Mr. Shaw.
Yes, Mayor and Council. I think you all know by now that I err on the side of conservatism and caution with closed sessions. However, this would be an appropriate topic for a closed session so as not to tip your strategy or tip the, especially the price. The pricing
right,
discussion is expressly allowed to go into closed session so as not to jeopardize potential negotiations.
Yeah, very good.
So I'm not going to talk pricing, but this isn't a new opinion. You guys have heard this from me before. I personally am opposed to utilizing that land for commercial use. It's surrounded by residential on all areas. Our general plan specifically puts all of our commercial concentrated in our commercial zone, and I think that the intent of that was to give that community feel to the rest of our community with commercial being all centralized in one location.
Good point.
And just to be clear, I'm not advocating for commercial. I'm just saying we don't have the expertise to put a value on any of that. So if we're going to even talk about it, we need to talk to somebody professional about it. It wasn't that I was advocating one way or the other.
Me either.
Okay. Anything else? If not, then let's move on. Item number 14. And Mr. Bunker, you are presenting.
Mayor and Council, Councilmember Crawley had asked that we add this item to the agenda to discuss the roles and duties of the Mayor, City Council, and City Manager. And the City Attorney, David Shaw, has prepared some information in relation to the city and state codes. And I'll probably turn the time over to Mr. Shaw.
Thank you. Mayor and Council, I have emailed to you the materials I've got. Hard copies as well for each of you relative to our analysis on what are the roles of the mayor, the council, the city manager under current state code and under the city code. In order to adequately describe the roles, we have to take a walk down history lane just briefly because it's important to understand what type of government the city of Cedar Hills has. Under the current state code, it is described as a six-member council form of government, where the mayor is the chair of the council, presides over the meetings, and has a variety of powers and duties. Historically, it would have been described as a council-manager form of government, also with the six-member form of city council, and also with a city manager. The reason I mentioned History Road is because in 2008, the Utah legislature abolished the city-manager form of government, but grandfathered those cities who had exercised the council manager form of government, and so that's where we sit. And we sit in a bit of a strange conundrum, which I'll get to in just a minute. And so the state code effectively said that the mayor in the council manager six-member form of government held a variety of powers. These come up under what I'll refer to as Section 104 of the state code. There are other numbers associated with that, but I won't bore you with the prefixes. They're in the memo. Section 104 granted the mayor a variety of executive powers, and it is clear that by state code the mayor is the chief executive officer of the city. Was then, still is. It is also clear that for those cities who had passed ordinances effective prior to May 4 of 2008, that those ordinances were still good and could have the effect of removing from the Section 104 powers of the mayor and granting those to a city manager. Cedar Hills finds itself in that position. That's not to say the mayor doesn't have power, so I'll get to that in just a minute. But certain of the more administrative functions that arise under Section 104 were then granted by city code to the city manager. And so we find that under the state code, the mayor is the chief executive officer. Under city code, the city manager is the chief administrative officer, each with their own rights and powers and duties. And I'll talk about that in just a minute. With respect to that, the grandfathering provisions continue to apply. In legal terminology, we would refer to the ability of the city back in 2001 when the powers were granted to the city manager. We refer to that as a reverse preemption. Standard preemption would be where the federal government tells the states they can't or can or must do something, or where the states tell the cities you can or must or can't do something. In reverse preemption, it turns it on its head. And so it was that the state law says that for a city that passed an ordinance prior to May 4 of 2008, granting to the city manager certain powers and functions, and removing those from the mayoral Section 104 functions, then that was a form of reverse preemption that continues today. Now we can talk about, well, what would happen if the city were to repeal that ordinance in reverse course? And that would put the city in a bit of a conundrum, because effectively that might give to the mayor enough power to consider the mayor as a strong mayor, or to consider the city in a different form of government other than the council manager form that it had in 2008 and continues until today. The conundrum there is that you can't change your form of government without the voice of the people. And so to do that is not an impossibility, but procedurally we would have to go through further analysis in order to figure out, really, can we do that, and if so, how. I don't address that in my memo, but I raise that sort of as a red flag to say if you wanted to change the current status, we would need to have further discussion about that. And so the mayoral functions and duties, again, he's the CEO. He chairs the meetings. He sets the agenda for the meetings. And most importantly, he's responsible for the hiring and the firing of the city manager, subject to the advice and consent of the council. So the mayor is a little bit hamstrung in the ability to just simply willy-nilly hire and fire. However, he has quite a bit of say in that process. And the only time that would not be the case is if the council were to effectively exercise the right to not give advice and consent. And so it is that the mayor carries a bit of a large stick that way, especially in the supervision of the city manager directly. Now, the city manager finds himself in an interesting position because he reports to the mayor, because the mayor hires and fires him, but it's with advice and consent of the council, and a part of his task is to carry out the policies established by the council. And so it is that he effectively serves two masters, the council at large and the mayor. On a day-to-day basis, the administrative functions largely fall to the city manager. And so staff reports to the city manager. He's responsible to make sure that they're doing their jobs according to the policies set forward by the city council. And as he does so, he effectively either succeeds or puts his neck in the proverbial noose. And so there are a variety of functions and duties that by city code have been granted to the city manager. And again, it's the reverse preemption that gets us there. One of the most important of those duties as it affects the council is that the city manager is the budget officer and responsible and to make sure the fiscal affairs of the city are in order and be, and he is to report that information to the council, who has ultimate oversight over budgetary matters. The power of the purse effectively lies with the governing body, which is the city council. So then what does the city council do? Well, the city council is responsible for setting the broad policies, for setting the ordinances, the resolutions, anything regulatory in nature that concerns the city. But typically should not get involved in the management of the day-to-day affairs. In other words, you don't tell the street sweeper which street to sweep today. But you might tell the street sweeper where to sweep on a monthly basis. That's a broader policy issue. And so, yes.
Can I interrupt you just on that one point?
Please.
But you're referring to the mayor telling him that, right?
No. I'm referring to the council setting the broad policy. The mayor would then talk to the manager about go get it done.
Okay, because
and then the manager would say, hey Bob, I don't know his name, but hey Bob, you didn't sweep the corner today.
So the point is that as a council, we should never go to Bob and say sweep my street first.
Exactly.
Or everything should be directed through the chief administrative officer. Correct? Or well, to the mayor first, then the chief administrative officer.
Through the mayor first, then to the administrative officer. But likewise, the mayor should direct the broad policy for the manager, who then directs the minutia. But even there, the department heads would also have similar supervisory control. So the city manager would not necessarily go to Bob the street sweeper.
Right.
He might go to the public works director.
Public works director, yeah.
Who then would flow down the chart. So at all times, the chief executive officer can pull a trump card if there's a problem. And so it is that as a broad policy issue, that shouldn't happen regularly, but it could certainly happen in exigent circumstances.
Sure.
As it could with all of the council members. So at the end of the day, the buck stops with you as the elected officials, which is why the city manager is a hiree and reports to all of you, because you report to the ultimate bosses, who are the citizens of Cedar Hills. And you'll see in the memo, I figured we would not have time to go point by point through the chart. But I've provided you a couple of charts. One, the one in the memo basically details it as we discuss the mayor, the council, and the manager positions. And then I've given you a side-by-side comparison of really what do those duties look like. We think we've picked up all of them in state law and city code. But if we missed one or two, please forgive us. I understand this is not an easy analysis because we're dealing with different sections of the code from different years, and not just state code, but city code as well. And so we're trying to assimilate all of those functions and duties into a single cheat sheet. From a broad perspective, I think, as I've outlined, is the general way things should function. I have reviewed Mr. Johnson's prior view on this. I don't think that our view is all that incompatible with his. I think it's quite compatible, in fact. But if there's some minor nuances, I'm happy to discuss those.
I have a quick question for you. So let's say a city council person wants to get some information or talk to someone that's down the chain a little bit. Would the city council member go to the city manager and say, hey, I'd like to talk to one of your employees. Can we talk together? Or would they have to, or would that be against the rules to go directly to that person? Or would it be against the rules to go, you have to go through the mayor to get to the manager?
Yeah.
What's the rules on that?
Yeah, so there's no hard and fast rule on that.
Okay.
And that's why I say the city manager effectively serves two masters,
mm-hmm.
as do I, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my capacity as city attorney, maybe that's a little easier example. I report to the council and the mayor directly. Mm-hmm. But when staff has issues that need to be addressed from a legal perspective, grandma requests, contracts needing to be reviewed, those don't necessarily come to the council first before they send them to me to review.
Right.
And so it is with the city manager. There may be times where it's more expedient for you to go straight to the manager without necessarily filtering it through five different layers,
mm-hmm.
or even two different layers. But that's more of a policy issue for you all to decide how to handle. There's nothing in law that says you must talk to the mayor before you talk to the manager, or that the manager must not speak to individual council members. That would effectively freeze the ability of the manager to do his job. That said, I'm sure there are some protocols that you have developed among yourselves, or that you should or might want to consider adopting among yourselves, to ensure that it's also not chaos.
Right.
So that's my presentation, Mayor and Council, for today. I'd be happy to answer detailed questions. The memo gets into a lot more detail about this, and so if you have specific questions, I'd be more than happy to address them.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Questions? Got anything, Mike?
Is this memo free to be shared publicly, or is it?
I did not produce this attorney-client, but if you would like to consider it as such, that is your prerogative. You're the client, but I have not released this publicly. If you choose to do so, it's your privilege to waive.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Not, let's move on. And we'd like to thank the public for being here tonight. We're going to go into exec session at this point. And so, someone like to make a motion. This is item number 15, to go into exec session to discuss pending or reasonably imminent litigation.
Just a second, I'm trying to find the agenda.
Okay. No problem.
I move that we go into a closed session pursuant to Utah State Code 52-4-204 and 52-4-205(1)(c) to discuss pending or reasonably imminent litigation.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
And Mayor, just a reminder that for the record to comply, we need to state the location of the closed session, and then it would be a voice vote.
So to amend by motion, do I need to say the whole thing again?
Sorry, a roll call vote.
Okay, so I amend my motion to include the location of the Cedar Hills Community Center. Do I need to give an address?
No.
Okay.
That's sufficient.
Okay. So now I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been seconded by Mr. Geddes. We'll have a roll call vote. So, Mr. Augustus.
Aye.
Mr. Crowley.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here.